This is Authors in Focus.
Hi, I'm Mike Levin. I'm a writer, publisher, and author publicist. Want a fun satirical read? Check out the Cider and Ale Chronicles, now out on Amazon, and get ready for the Max and the Captain trilogy, coming your way in February. Today, we're joined by Stephen Christensen, author of the Orbel Gurren series. Welcome to Authors in Focus. Today, we're here with Stephen Christensen, author of the 17-book Orbel Gurren series. How are you doing, Stephen?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me, Michael.
Oh, thank you for being here. Definitely very interested in talking to you today. First of all, this is a super long series, which is always really cool. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that are, people in this community that are always looking for a big epic series to sink their teeth into. There can never be too many of those. And there are very few that are 17 books long. So definitely very interested in talking about it. But I always like to start these interviews with a couple of fun questions before we get into the heavier writing stuff. So the first question is, if you could have a drink, any type of drink, doesn't have to be alcoholic, with any writer, living or dead, who would it be and why?
Oh, that would be Edgar Allan Poe. He's my favorite author. He did so much for writing. He was the first science fiction writer. He helped Sherlock Holmes, inspired that. I really enjoyed his writing and his personality and his life. And I just would like to get to know him better and how he thinks and the things about his life. So, yeah, definitely Poe.
Awesome. You know, it doesn't strike me as an uncommon answer. I know he has a very large following of admirers. I've never actually read, I've heard about, his various influences on the horror genre and stuff. And, you know, I even know a little bit about him personally, but I've never actually read anything that he's written. And it's weird because I'm a fan of classics. I mean, my favorite author of all time is probably James Joyce, and I've devoured pretty much all the classics, but I've never read anything by Poe, which is very strange.
Try Murders of the Rue Morgue. You can see how Sherlock Holmes had been inspired by that. And there are a few science fiction stories that he's written. So he definitely did a huge thing in literary genres.
Nice. No, I definitely will. Okay, so my final kind of like off the beaten past question I want to answer before the main interview is, okay, so I don't like to use the term guilty pleasure because I don't really think that there's anything that anyone should necessarily be ashamed of, but what is something that you enjoy that a lot of people might, that know you or that, or even that don't know you, might be a little surprised about?
I'm not sure. I'm just a regular guy, I guess. I don't know of any guilty pleasures that I do. I love hiking and traveling and just normal regular stuff.
Yeah, it's fair enough. I mean, for me, it would be like I have a respect for Taylor Swift as a songwriter, and I've always been kind of an advocate for her stance and role as a role model to female to especially younger females. And as somebody that's been a songwriter my whole life, I've kind of said that. And a lot of people have said, really? Because, like, you're into metal and like, heavy stuff. And my answer to that will be, yeah, but you know what? I can still respect a really good pop songwriter. And I can respect somebody who really knows their target demographic that well, that they've been able to achieve that level of success, fully speaking to an entire generation of people. So... that would be mine. Let's get into writing. I have asked you this question in a written interview, but I like to kind of start with it because it's a good place to get a little foundation about who you are. So when did you know you wanted to be a writer? And describe a little bit of the journey that led to your first published work.
Well, I think I started writing when I was in high school. Come to think of it, I actually started writing in grade school. I turned in a short story And the teacher loved it so much that it really stuck with me. And then when I went into high school, I started writing more, but nothing was published. It wasn't until I read War of the Spider Queen with Ari Salvatore looking over the whole event. And after being inspired by that genre and then reading some really horrible books and saying, I could write a better story than that, with the inspiration of both, I decided, why not? Why not write my own Dark Elf series and see what I can do? And it just took off from there. The story was supposed to be only 8 books, but then it grew to 10 and 12 and 15 and 17 and offshoots, and it just kept coming out. So love the journey so far. Can't wait for kids to continue and blossom.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've read quite a bit of the first book, and the prose is excellent, and I actually really enjoy it. I've read a lot of the Salvatore books. I was actually going to go there later on when we talked about influences, but you kind of beat me to it. Obviously the dark elf theme in the books, that's something that's been really prominent in epic fantasy, and Salvatore is you know, obviously famous for it. Aside from Salvatore, what were some of the other influences that you really turned to when you started writing the series? But I'm not just talking about books and authors either. I'm talking, anything in the media, film, television, gaming, anything.
Well, I do turn to Stephen King and Silverberg and Poe and Salvatore for the literary genres. But I also turned to some of the influences of TV when I was a kid. Things like The Outer Limits and Twilight Zone and some of the old spooky stories that are just odd and bizarre and twisted. And I think that those had a huge influence on my storytelling. And then I also pull from real life adventures. A lot of things you'll see in these books are things that I've actually done, although slightly hidden. And putting all that together just kind of comes up with a story of its own.
That's awesome. You actually said something before that it kind of struck me as well, which is that you started writing thinking that you were going to be writing something a lot shorter, and it just kind of blossomed and has continued to grow and grow. I can actually relate to that as well, because when I started writing, and it was only during COVID, basically, when I started, I had intended my first book to be a standalone 100-page novella. But I had what I would call specific writer's block. I don't like to say writer's block is really a thing, but it was specific writer's block in the sense that I'm very good at writing comedy and I'm very good at writing strong character interactions. But when it came to having to choreograph a fight scene and get magic into it and make it a fantasy story, which I wanted to do, I was really stumped. So I ended up calling on JMD Reed, who's now my co-writer, to help me through it. He was just going to ghostwrite a section for me to get through it. But we ended up having a lot of fun on the project, and something that was originally just going to be one book so that I could say, hey, I wrote a book, has turned into a 12-book series. And I finally decided to end it so that we could move on to something else. But it turned into a writing partnership that's really blossomed. So it's a really cool thing when you can be set with one idea or kind of a limit, but the depth of creativity that you discover while actually writing opens up such an expansive world.
Yes, and it also gives the characters room to grow in ways that I hadn't imagined. I've read a lot of authors who let the characters run a little bit, go beyond what was plotted. And then when the plot line grows and the characters grow, you end up writing more books than what you thought you would. So I do that as well. I only plot about half of a story in a book, and then I give room for characters to grow in that story. And then I find I have to write another story. So, yeah, I love doing that. I love letting the creation, imagination just flow and not say that I have to do a specific thing.
Right. Now, one of the common things I hear, because I've spoken to so many authors over the years, is that their characters legitimately come alive while they're writing and dictate the direction they want the story to go. I've experienced that to some extent, I think, although not necessarily to the extent that some authors say, which is that they almost feel like they're not in control anymore. They feel like at a certain point their characters have taken over. Is this a phenomenon that you've experienced when writing, or do you generally always feel like you're kind of in control and steering the ship?
Well, it's kind of both. I do try to dictate where I want the characters to go, but I have a character named Quizelle, who was supposed to be a throwaway character, and here she is in book 17, still alive.
Right.
And a fan favorite. People love her. I'm like, but she was supposed to be, oh man, how did that happen?
Yeah, I've totally been there. I have, in our second book, James created, because normally James writes off of my outlines. So all our partnership works where I'll outline the entire novel chapter by chapter, come up with, like, you know, all the characters and their traits, and I'll write usually the first few chapters and the last few chapters. He'll write the middle stuff and send it to me, and then I'll go through everything and take out certain parts and modify them and change them and add things to, that are more my characteristics, just to make it blend more so that people aren't like, oh, I can clearly tell James wrote that, and I can clearly tell Mike wrote that. We want it to feel like a cohesive thing. He wrote like a basically an AI that belonged to the bad guy in my second book that was really cheeky and overly positive and basically a foil to the really evil mob boss bad guy character, because she was always talking about safety and safety protocols and always concerned that he was doing everything safe, and it would drive the bad guy crazy, and it made for one of the funniest scenes in the book. We thought it was going to be a done in one kind of funny little thing, but this AI has made it into almost every book of our 12 book series since then. So I totally know what that's like when you kind of think you've got a throwaway that everybody likes it, and then you look for new places to put it. So you had mentioned that you're basically waiting to just see where this world is going to expand. You've written 17 novels, which is incredibly impressive. Do you see an end in sight for this particular series, or is the idea just to kind of keep it going as kind of an ongoing thing?
The series does in fact end on book 17. There is a finale to that. And the last book is called Resolution. So it wraps everything up nicely. However, there is room to grow the characters in another series. So I'm already plotting another series for these characters to go on.
That's awesome. So how does it feel then? I will ask this question. How does it feel, especially in the realm of fantasy, where, as you and I both know, there are so many authors that have started amazing series and just not finished them? You know, some of my favorite authors, I've just given up waiting, and I've just been like, okay, well, I can just make up the ending of this thing for myself because I'm never going to get a chance to read it. So how does it feel being one of those authors that not only completed a full fantasy series, but completed a massive 17 book series? Like, that's got to feel pretty good.
Oh, it feels incredible, especially the way it came out, because this is one of those things that I just let my imagination flow. And where I thought the book was going to end one way, it ended up different ways along the way. And then another twist. I got so excited. I went running to my house and went, oh, there's another twist. So I was really happy when I'm able to finish it up. And I'm excited, and I want to share it with people and say, you've got to make it all the way to book 17 and see how it ends. I feel very, very accomplished.
Yeah, no, you should be really proud of that. That's a major accomplishment. I'm kind of at that point right now where we're almost there. And I submitted the full outline. It was the biggest outline I've ever submitted to James for the 12th book of our series, which is the final book. 100%. You know, never say never that there will be a chance to bring a character back into something else one day. But for the any near future, I've said this is it. And I sent in that final outline, and I'm at that point where I was so excited. I was on such an adrenaline from the way this last book is going to end everything. even if only 10 people read it at this point, and I'm hoping there's more than that, I will just be so excited to hear what those people have to say. Because it's really cool. So I know what it's like to just be riding on that that wave of creative adrenaline where you go in a certain direction and you're like, wow, that's just cool, you know?
Yeah, I could definitely relate to that. I'm still on that adrenaline high, and the book's been out for a while. I'm still excited about it. So, yeah, definitely.
Very cool. Now, as a self-published author, because, you know, as all self-published authors know, there are highs and lows, and there are real advantages, and there are also certain stigmas that self-published authors have to face. What has been the biggest joy so far for you as a self-published author, and what has been something that has kind of been a little bit complicated, or you know, I hesitate to use the word stumbling block, but I guess like a little bit of an obstacle along the way in this whole process?
Well, I'll give you an up first. An upswing is the fact that I did it by myself. I didn't need a big corporation. I didn't need a big sponsor. I did it all by myself. You know, that is huge. But the stumbling block is the marketing. The market is just full of authors. And, you know, my books are just a drop in the ocean. It's really difficult to get my name out there and then say, hey, this will be good for you. And all the other authors are doing the same thing. So I think marketing is really my biggest stumbling block right now.
Right. And I get that. And you know, as an off the record conversation, I definitely have some very specific ideas for you, you in particular, because you've got that 17 book series. One of the things that I think is amazing about self-publishing and to some extent small press publishing is you were able to put out 17 books in a relatively short period of time. Had you been signed to a traditional publisher, they're going to let you put out a book maybe once a year if you're really lucky, usually once every year and a half to every 2 years. So for me, one of the most amazing things about self-publishing is you can get that work into people's hands quickly, and you can get that feedback quickly, and you're not stagnated by sitting on 15 unread manuscripts that will never be read that won't be read for 30 years. You know what I mean?
Right.
But marketing and obviously, but obviously the DIY factor, the being able to sort of command your own ship when it comes to cover design and when it comes to release schedules and stuff. Those have been the peaks for me as a self-published author.
Oh yeah, I had fun working with my cover designer in the same way. And when he came out with the design, knowing that I worked with him, that was a definite high. Being able to put my book out as soon as it's ready, a definite high. So I do love, you know, self-publishing. Just that the marketing is my biggest difference right now.
So I wanted to ask you a little bit about your characters. So who was, you know, you've had a lot of time to kind of, I would imagine, peel through a whole bunch of characters in 17 books. Who would you say has been your absolute favorite character to write, like a character that you're going to miss not writing? And can you think of a character that maybe challenged you a little bit more and that you you struggled with more?
Well, I think my absolute favorite ended up being that throwaway character, Cordell. She's a succubus that seems to get her hands into every situation. And when I want a situation to blow up, she comes in and just messes everything up deliberately. She's just a fun character to write. And everybody seems to love it. If I want something to go wrong, she's there. That was her job.
Right.
I think the challenging one is a female character named Iselme. She goes from being a priestess of the Spider Queen to a priestess of the Moon Goddess while trying to have a relationship with a guy, and she doesn't know how to have a relationship because she's not brought up in society that believes relationships should work, and he doesn't trust her, and she doesn't trust him, and it gets all complicated. with what she's feeling, and now I have to translate that to how would a woman approach this, and how would she feel. It's really difficult to get my thoughts wrapped around her entire situation.
Right. That's actually, it's kind of interesting you said that, because this was, I had been, I had this conversation with somebody else that I interviewed, and one of the questions that I had specifically asked, because this male author wrote a female protagonist as the MC of the story. And I've actually known quite a few male writers that have done a really good job, in my opinion, with that female voice. And I asked them, because one of the things that's challenged me in my writing is I have a lot of female sort of secondary characters that I think are, you know, well-written. Most of them avatars of my wife. Like, when I write women, I'm usually writing my wife. I find that. But I always have the MC character from that male perspective to kind of fall back on. And one of the reasons I wanted to end my series is because I wanted to try something completely different and actually write a story from a female MC's perspective in the first person. So I totally understand. So how do you approach that? Like, as a male writing a female character, how did you end up sort of approaching that character to kind of get into her head and know that you were coming from, you know, a place that was representing effectively?
Well, that's kind of a complicated thing. I would have to draw on references of the women in my life, like you did on your wife. I am married. I have a daughter as well. And I also draw on my mom and my siblings, coworkers, fans, people I've talked to, friends, and try to pull a little bit from each person.
Right.
Now, with that being said, I cannot honestly say I know everything about women. There's just no way that I can honestly say that.
Right.
I just, you know, do my best, draw on the experiences I know from the people I know, references to things I know, and then try to also say, what would a reasonable person do? I don't want to go and say, oh, what would a woman do? I would just say, what would a reasonable person do?
Right. That's what a lot of people say, actually, is that, and one of the things that makes a lot of sense to me is that they're not really writing. I've heard like people say, like, I'm not really writing the gender. I'm just writing the person. So, you know what I mean? And that's, I mean, to an extent, that's the way I've kind of handled it, too, is, you know, seeing people as people. And if you're dealing especially with an emotional situation, or you're dealing with a plot device moving the story along situation, reasonable people are going to make reasonable choices, and irrational people are going to make irrational choices. And any gender, any situation, you're going to have people that handle things in different ways. And drawing from what you know, that's how they do it.
And I also have to think about some situations that I've heard women talk about in their lives and try to put that in. For example, there's a battle scene, and a guy sees his girlfriend in trouble, and he goes to help her. Unfortunately, at the end of the battle, she turns to him and says, don't ever do that again. I had something planned, and I was thinking being in this situation, and by you coming to my rescue, you foiled it. So I have to take things and rearrange it and come across in a different perspective as best as I could.
Right. No, that makes a lot of sense. Now, I had mentioned, and you had mentioned, that when writing our characters, you know, bringing in kind of certain references to people we know in our personal lives and stuff like that. How much of yourself has gone into your characters?
There's a character named Maldeev, M-A-L-D-E-V. He's one of the main male characters, and I see a lot of me in him, just a lot. Yeah, you can probably just take his name out, put my name in there, and that's about it.
Cool. And where do those sort of similarities come in?
Well, let's just say antisocial. I not very good with my social graces. He likes to just go out and run just to get away from people. I do that a lot. He's a little bit more emotional, more prone to emotional outbursts, acts before thinking, doesn't necessarily finish a task. I don't know. I could probably go on if I think about it. There's definitely a lot of traits that I have. And I didn't see it until after I wrote it, and I went, oh my goodness, I act like that.
Right. There's always that kind of like for me when I'm writing, I sometimes feel like I'm a little bit of like a somewhat narcissistic writer, because so much of the MC is based on myself. In one of my books called The Cider of Legend, I have two snakes, they're husband and wife, in the fictional Mojave Desert. And they're basically like the two snakes have the same name as my wife and I, basically, with apostrophes, because apostrophes in fantasy and it's satirical and that's just funny. But you know what I mean? So all this stuff, bringing myself almost to a point of cathartic narcissism into these stories, is something that as a writer that wants to continue to improve and see perspectives in my writing, I'm trying to get away from that. So the way that I did that is I went in the complete metatextual direction, and I wrote a book which is pretty much a self-memoir of vignettes and personal things that I experienced in my life, and I paralleled it in the same book to a fictional story that was taking place with another character. And then I said, okay, this is it. Now I'm gonna go in a completely different direction, and I'm gonna try and look at other perspectives and try to stay away from that narcissism in my writing.
And I could see that some of this might be a narcissism for me, but some of it is also a catharsism. That is,
absolutely.
I have things in my past and things in my head that I just need to get out. And I didn't realize I was writing so many situations into the story so I could relive them and see them and go through them again and share them and just get them out of my system, even if it's a different in the fantasy setting.
Like writing is totally cathartic, and it's been over the last couple of years, it's been a majorly cathartic thing for me. So yeah, no, I think that's probably the way it works a lot. Is when people write, they don't necessarily think about it or even know that you're writing a story and it comes together, and then all of a sudden you read it back and you're like, wow, that's me. And it's just something that happens. I mean, people say write what you know, right?
Definitely. And when you write what you know, especially when you draw on your own experience, then it's something you would read. And if it's something you would read, then it's something you would share. You know, why write something you don't want to read?
Right. No, exactly. Do you write with a particular market in mind? Like, I know that you mentioned the Salvatore influence and stuff like that. Was there any conscious like thought, or has there ever been throughout the process of writing the 17 book series, that you're attempting to write to a market that appreciates this type of Wiseman, Hicks, Tolkien, Salvatore, Raymond Feist, like sort of classic epic fantasy? Or is it just something that you've enjoyed and wanted to write for yourself and hope that, you know, maybe some of these people would enjoy it and come along?
I fall more into the second group that you said. It's more for me to enjoy writing and just getting the story out. I do hope that people enjoy it. But in the end, the story was for me and those who want to get to know me, and not necessarily to say, hey, everybody's going to enjoy this book. It was mostly for me. But I do think that the stories fit in a small niche. Not only do people need to know fantasy fiction, but high fantasy, and then dark elves, and then want to know thick plots that aren't going to be resolved into the 17th book. So the niche keeps getting smaller and smaller. So yeah, there is kind of that small niche in mine, but it is mostly for myself.
Right. No, that's cool. That's you know, a lot of I've heard the statement time and time again. Either I write for an audience of one, one being myself, and I think to some extent you've got to, like, you have to be able to have buy-in into what you're writing. You've got to enjoy writing it, because it's very easy as a reader, especially you know, a frequent reader or a seasoned reader, to be able to tell when the author feels impassioned by what they're doing, and when the author is just kind of writing for the paycheck, or writing to market. So I think that that's a pretty common thing. What's really cool is when you can somehow bring that passion and bring that kind of energy of writing into a public realm that appreciates it.
And, you know, one of the things I look at is David Bowie. He didn't write for the market. He didn't write for all the fans. He just wrote and sung what was his style and what he liked. He didn't want to go mainstream. That wasn't his thing. He was just doing his own thing. And that's what I want to do. I want to just do my own thing. I know I may not make it big, but that's okay.
Yeah, I totally get that. And that's, I think, something that everybody as authors is sort of aspiring to be. And it is a daunting task, but it's also something that is pretty amazing, because, you know, we get to do that with our creativity, right? And it's something that, you know, when you have the story in you, you want to keep doing it. And I know a lot of people that actually say, look, I would be writing books even if I was the only one that read them, or if it was only me and my best friend, I would still be putting this stuff out because I love writing.
Mm-hmm.
So what I wanted to ask you is, what's next? I know you finished this series, and you mentioned that you were sticking in the same world. So what are you working on now, and when do you plan on putting something out?
I'm working on a spy thriller novel set in modern day. Think X-Files type, where you follow a female FBI agent, and she gets called to check on some murders. And it becomes a world threat with shadow governments and just a bunch of cool stuff going on. What's interesting is this is going to slightly tie into a sci-fi book, which ties into the fantasy fiction book. So you can follow a thread if you read all the books that they kind of are in the same universe. I drew that from how Stephen King does his universe, how they slightly tie in together. So,
right.
But this is going to be a 4-book series, starting with this one. And I'm about halfway done with it. I'm just finishing up probably in the next few months.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I love when things like that happen, where, for example, like you mentioned with Stephen King, one of the coolest things about his stuff is the Dark Tower connection.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty much every single novel has some reference or some connection to the Dark Tower, which is something that I've taken from in my series as well, is even if the characters are completely unrelated to stuff that's going on, because it isn't all one series, it's three trilogies that are taking place kind of at different times set in the same universe, there's always certain references that are kind of Easter eggs for people that have read everything.
Right. And all my books are going to be that way. So if somebody reads them all, they'll see the connection. But they don't have to read them all either. So if they just want to read the sci-fi, that's great. Or the thrillers, that's great.
Yeah. No, that sounds awesome. Yeah, it sounds really cool. Actually exciting me to want to read more of your stuff after this, and to continue with the first book. My biggest issue with reading is that aside from everything else I'm doing, I'm also an editor. So a lot of the time when somebody asks me what I'm reading, my answer will be whatever I'm editing at the moment. And that's just the unfortunate thing, because I have a to-be-read list that literally is... In Toronto, we have the CN Tower, as you probably know. And my TBR list is probably as tall or taller than the CN Tower. As tall as Burj Khalifa, anyway. So, yeah. But that sounds really awesome. So before I ask you a little bit about where people can find you, I would like to ask another question that I have asked you before, but I think it's a really important question. So I'm going to ask it again. If you could give one piece of advice to new and aspiring writers, what would that be?
Well, I actually have three.
Three is good. I can handle three.
Okay. Live, read, write. Live, that means go out and, I don't know, fall in love, get your heart broken, get in a fight, get a job, lose a job, go swimming, go hiking, do something with your life. This will actually inspire and encourage things to write about. You know, write what you know. Go out and do something to know, not just sit in front of the computer or on the phone all day. That's not life. That doesn't interact with people. Reading, writing is about interacting with the environment and interacting with people. And if the author doesn't know how to do that, then they're not going to write. So go out and live. Read. Read good books. Read bad books. Read the classics. Read everything. And then figure out, why is something a bad book? Why is something a good book? Why did you like this one? And then mesh it all together to come up with your own style of writing. And finally, write. I've talked to so many people who say, oh, I'm writing a book. And I ask, how far have you gotten? And they say, oh, I haven't started yet. Well, I guess you're not really writing a book then.
Exactly.
So write every single day. Write good stuff, write bad stuff. Go back and edit it later. But just do brain dump and let the creative processes flow. It's okay to write poorly at first. I mean, nobody walked. At first, they crawled and they stumbled and then they finally walked. So write every single day and it becomes a habit and it becomes good. And those are the three things to do, is live, read, and then write.
I've done a lot of podcasts and I've interviewed a lot of people. And I think I've asked that question every single interview that I've ever done. And I will honestly tell you that that is my all-time favorite answer. So thank you for that. Yeah. No, it's just it's an excellent answer, and I fully concur with everything you said, and I think that's really important. To add to that, I would say like a really big thing is to not hold yourself to a ridiculous standard and to do you. The people that look at an author that's put out 50 books in 4 years, or you know, even like you, 17 books, and say, well, I'm not a real writer because I can't put out 17 books in 4 years, or I don't have 50 books out. I only have one book out, or I only have one book with another one coming. No, you do what you can. You write at your own pace. You need to figure out a pace that works, which is why I agree with you that if you have never written and you're calling yourself a writer and you're just sort of keeping it in your head because you're afraid to get those words out, you aren't really writing. But I also think that if you hold yourself to impossible standards, it's going to really dissuade you from doing this. And it's to write one book is a major accomplishment.
Oh yeah, it's huge, but it's scary.
Absolutely.
When I first put my first book out, I was so scared that everybody was going to just rag on it. That's not the case. Usually people didn't read it, but when they did, they liked it. So
right.
It's okay. Get it out there.
Yeah. I was shocked when I put my first book out and I got, I sent it out to, I don't know, close to 50, 60 people for ARC reads. And I got really long essay length reviews and they were all 5 stars. Made a couple of best of lists, best of the year lists from some bloggers, which I was really, really surprised by, because I sat on the book for 2.5 years before I put it out, thinking it was an idea, a ridiculous idea that nobody would want to read about. So I think it's courageous to actually take that step and do it. So yeah, great answer. And I really appreciate that. So, Stephen, where can people find you if they're looking for you online?
I have a Facebook page. You can just find me on Facebook. That's where I usually am. I do have my books on Amazon. I do have a Twitter account. I also have another page, but I will have to send you a link to that.
Okay, great. Yeah, please do. And I'll make sure that we include all the links when we post the interview.
Okay.
Awesome. Well, Stephen, it's been excellent talking to you today. Congratulations once again on a major accomplishment, completing a 17-book epic fantasy series. And I really look forward to continuing conversation and hearing about what you got coming out next.
All right. And thank you again for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
This has been Authors in Focus. You can find my satirical fantasy novels on Amazon. Need help finding readers? Connect with me on Facebook in the Fantasy Sci-Fi Focus group or at authorsinfocus@gmail.com. You can find more episodes of this podcast at fantasy-focus.com and where your favorite podcasts are hosted.